I'm Catherine Davis, and today we're going to be talking about stress-related illnesses and what we can do about it. And I feel that as we have this conversation about accessibility to healthcare, it's important to begin to take into consideration our own self-empowerment and what we can do to improve our health and really begin to make choices that are going to make it less necessary to access those health cares. And I am going to be sharing with you a report from WebMD, 10 health problems related to stress that you can fix. So that's pretty significant. So let's look at what these stress-related issues are. One of them, or the one at the top of the list, is heart disease. Researchers have long suspected that the stressed-out type A personality has a higher risk of high blood pressure and heart problems. We don't know why exactly. Stress can directly increase heart rate and blood flow, and causes the release of cholesterol and triglycerides into the bloodstream. It's also possible that stress is related to other problems, an increased likelihood of smoking or obesity that indirectly increase the heart risks. Doctors do know that sudden emotional stress can be a trigger for serious cardiac problems, including heart attacks. People who have chronic heart problems need to avoid acute stress and learn how to successfully manage life's unavoidable stresses as much as they can. The next on the list is asthma, which is actually a bit surprising to me, but many studies have shown that stress can worsen asthma. Some evidence suggests that apparent chronic stress might even increase the risk of developing asthma in their children. One study looked at how parental stress affected the asthma rates of young children who were also exposed to air pollution or whose mothers smoked during pregnancy. The kids with stressed-out parents had a substantially higher risk of developing asthma. Number three is obesity. Excess fat in the belly seems to pose greater health risks than fat on the legs or hips. And unfortunately, that's just where people with high stress seem to store it. Stress causes higher levels of hormone cortisol that seems to increase the amount of fat that's deposited in the abdomen. Diabetes. Stress can worsen diabetes in two ways. First, it increases the likelihood of bad behaviors, such as unhealthy eating and excessive drinking. Second, stress seems to raise the glucose levels of people with type 2 diabetes directly. Headaches is number five. Stress is considered one of the most common triggers for headaches, not just tension headaches, but migraines as well. Number six, depression and anxiety. It's probably no surprise that chronic stress is connected with higher rates of depression and anxiety. One survey of recent studies found that people who had stress related to their jobs, like demanding work and few rewards, had an 80% higher risk of developing depression within a few years than people with lower stress. Seven, for me, was another surprise, gastrointestinal problems. here's one thing that stress doesn't do. It doesn't cause ulcers. However, it can make them worse. Stress is also a common factor in many other GI conditions, such as chronic heartburn or gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD, and irritable bowel syndrome. Number 8 is Alzheimer's disease. One study found that stress might worsen Alzheimer's disease, causing its brain lesions to form more quickly. Some researchers speculate that reducing stress has the potential to slow down the progression of the disease. 9, accelerated aging. There's actually evidence that stress can affect how you age. One study compared the DNA of mothers who were under high stress. They were caring for a chronically ill child. With women who were not, compared to women who were not, researchers found that a particular region of the chromosomes showed the effects of accelerated aging. Stress seemed to accelerate aging about 9 to 17 additional years. And number 10 is premature death. A study looked at the health effects of stress by studying elderly caregivers looking after their spouses. People who are naturally under a great deal of stress, it found that caregivers had a 63% higher rate of death than people their age who were not caregivers. So that's a pretty significant number of illnesses that are affected by stress. And so the thing that we might want to ask ourselves, what are the ways that we can take steps to combat stress? And the same article recommends 4 ways to fight back against stress and improve your health. And it says, the next time you feel stressed, here are 4 stress relief tips you can try. Breathe deeply. Just a few minutes of deep breathing can calm you and tame the physiologic stress response. While building in a specific time to relax each day is a good idea, one advantage to deep breathing for stress relief is that you can do it anywhere, at your desk or in your parked car, for instance. And the author recommends that you breathe out and relax a specific muscle group. Start with the muscles in your jaw. On the next breath out, relax your shoulders and move through the different areas of your body until feeling calm. 2, focus on the moment. When you're stressed, you're probably living in the future or the past. You're worried about what to do next or regretful about something you've already done. To get some stress relief, instead, try focusing on what you're doing right now. You can calm yourself by bringing yourself back to the present moment. If you're walking, feel the sensation of your legs moving. If you're eating, focus on the taste and the sensation of the food. Reframe the situation. So you're already running late and then find yourself stuck in terrible traffic. Getting worked up is a natural reaction, but it won't help you at all. Rather than swearing and pounding the steering wheel, go get a different perspective. Look at that time as an opportunity, a few minutes to yourself where you don't have any other obligations. And 4 is keep your problems in perspective. It might seem Pollyannish, but the next time you're feeling stressed out, think about the things for which you're grateful. We get stressed when we focus so much on specific problems that we lose perspective. You need to remind yourself of the basic ways in which you are lucky that you have family and friends, that you can see, that you can walk. It can be a surprisingly effective method for stress relief. And those are the four recommendations of this article, published by WebMD. And it's an interesting perspective and an important perspective. And I wanted to share this article as a precursor to speaking about meditation, because I consider meditation to be one of the primary ways that we can impact our health in the long term. And meditation can also be seen as a, what you would say, as a spiritual practice. And I, for one, do use it in that regard. But it is an entirely useful practice for maintaining health. And I wanted to go to another article on Healthline, and their article is called 12 Science-Based Benefits of Meditation. And so this is reinforcing what we already shared, but letting us know that there is real science behind this. Reduced stress is one of the benefits of meditation. Most common reasons people try meditation. One study, including over 3,500 adults, showed that it lives up to its reputation for stress reduction. Normally, mental and physical stress cause increased levels of the stress hormone cortisol. This produces many of the harmful effects of stress, such as the release of inflammation-promoting chemicals called cytokines. This effect can disrupt sleep, promote depression and anxiety, increase blood pressure, and contribute to fatigue and cloudy thinking. In an 8-week study, a meditation style called mindfulness meditation reduced the inflammation response caused by stress. Another study in nearly 1,300 adults demonstrated that meditation may decrease stress. Notably, this effect was strongest in individuals with the highest levels of stress. Research has shown that meditation may also improve symptoms of stress-related conditions, including irritable bowel syndrome, post-traumatic stress disorder, and fibromyalgia. And under two, it says, controls anxiety. Less stress translates into less anxiety. For example, an 8-week study of mindfulness meditation helped participants reduce their anxiety. It also reduced symptoms of anxiety disorders such as phobias, social anxiety, paranoid thoughts, obsessive-compulsive behaviors, and panic attacks. Another study followed up with 18 volunteers 3 years after they had completed an 8-week meditation program. Most volunteers had continued practicing regular meditation and maintained lower anxiety levels over the long term. A larger study in 2,466 participants also showed that a variety of different meditation strategies may reduce anxiety levels. For example, yoga has been shown to help people reduce anxiety. This is likely due to benefits from both meditation practice and physical activity. Meditation may also help control job-related anxiety in high-pressure work environments. One study found that a meditation program reduced anxiety in a group of nurses. Number three, meditation promotes emotional health. Some forms of meditation can also lead to an improved self-image and more positive outlook on life. Two studies of mindfulness meditation found decreased depression in over 4,600 adults. One study, followed by 18 volunteers as they practiced meditation over 3 years, the study found that participants experienced long-term decreases in depression. Inflammatory chemicals called cytokines, which are released in response to stress, can affect mood, leading to depression. A review of several studies suggests meditation may reduce depression by decreasing these inflammatory chemicals. Another controlled study compared electrical activity between the brains of people who practice mindfulness meditation and the brains of others who did not. Those who meditated showed measurable changes in activity in areas related to positive thinking and optimism. So those are some really good responses to meditation, but there's more. Meditation enhances self-awareness. Some forms of meditation may help you develop a stronger understanding of yourself, helping you grow into your best self. For example, self-inquiry meditation explicitly aims to help you develop a greater understanding of yourself and how you relate to those around you. Other forms teach you to recognize thoughts that may be harmful or self-defeating. The idea is that as you gain greater awareness of your thought habits, you can steer them toward more constructive patterns. A study of 21 women fighting breast cancer found that when they took part in a Tai Chi program, their self-esteem improved more than it did than in those who received social support sessions. In another study, 40 senior men and women who took a mindfulness meditation program experienced reduced feelings of loneliness compared to a control group that had been placed on a wait list for the program. Also, experience in meditation may cultivate more creative problem solving. Number five, meditation lengthens attention span. Focused attention meditation is like weightlifting for your attention span. It helps increase the strength and endurance of your attention. For example, a study looked at the effects of an 8-week mindfulness meditation course and found it improved participants' ability to reorient and maintain their attention. A similar study showed that human resource workers who regularly practiced mindfulness meditation stayed focused on a task for longer. These workers also remember details of their tasks better than their peers who did not practice meditation. Moreover, One review concluded that meditation may even reverse patterns in the brain that contribute to mind wandering, worrying, and poor attention. Even meditating for a short period may benefit you. One study found that 4 days of practicing meditation may be enough to increase attention span. Very good. Number 6, meditation may reduce age-related memory loss. Improvements in attention and clarity of thinking may help keep your mind young. Kirtan Kriya is a method of meditation that combines a mantra or chant with repetitive motion of the fingers to focus thoughts. It improved participants' ability to perform memory tasks in multiple studies of age-related memory loss. Furthermore, a review of 12 studies found that multiple meditation styles increased attention memory and mental quickness in older volunteers. In addition to fighting normal age-related memory loss, meditation can at least partially improve memory in patients with dementia. It can also help control stress and improve coping in those caring for family members with dementia. And number 7, meditation can generate kindness. Some types of meditation may particularly increase positive feelings and actions toward yourself and others. Metta, a type of meditation also known as loving kindness meditation, begins with developing kind thoughts and feelings toward yourself. Through practice, people learn to extend this kindness and forgiveness externally, first to friends, then acquaintances, and ultimately enemies. 22 studies of this form of meditation have demonstrated its ability to increase people's compassion towards themselves and others. One study of 100 adults randomly assigned to a program that included loving kindness meditation found that these benefits were dose dependent. In other words, the more effort people put into metta meditation, the more positive feelings they experience. Another group of studies showed the positive feelings people develop through metta meditation can improve social anxiety, reduce marriage conflict, and help anger management. These benefits also appear to accumulate over time with the practice of loving kindness meditation. Number 8, meditation may help fight addictions. The mental discipline you can develop through meditation may help you break dependencies by increasing your self-control and awareness of triggers for addictive behaviors. Research has shown that meditation may help people learn to redirect their attention, increase their willpower, control their emotions and impulses, and increase their understanding of the causes behind their addictive behaviors. One study that taught 19 recovering alcoholics how to meditate found that participants who received the training got better at controlling their cravings and craving-related stress. Meditation may also help you control food cravings. A review of 14 studies found found mindfulness meditation helped participants reduce emotional and binge eating. Number 9, meditation improves sleep. Nearly half the population will struggle with insomnia at some point. One study compared two mindfulness-based meditation programs by randomly assigning participants to one of the two groups. One group practiced meditation while the other didn't. Participants who meditated fell asleep sooner and stayed asleep longer compared to those who didn't meditate. Becoming skilled in meditation may help you control or redirect the racing or runaway thoughts that often lead to insomnia. Additionally, it can help relax your body, releasing tension and placing you in a peaceful state in which you're more likely to fall asleep. And number 10 is, meditation helps control pain. Your perception of pain is connected to your state of mind, and it can be elevated in stressful conditions. For example, one study used functional MRI techniques to observe brain activity as participants experienced a painful stimulus. Some participants had gone through 4 days of mindfulness meditation training and others had not. The meditating patients showed increased activity in the brain centers known to control pain. They also reported less sensitivity to pain. One larger study looked at the effects of habitual meditation in 3,500 participants. It found that meditation was associated with decreased complaints of chronic or intermittent pain. An additional study of meditation in patients with terminal diseases found meditation may help mitigate chronic pain at the end of life. In each of these scenarios, meditators and non-meditators experience the same causes of pain, but meditators showed a greater ability to cope with pain and even experienced a reduced sensation of pain. Number 11. Meditation can decrease blood pressure. Meditation can also improve physical health by reducing strain on the heart. Over time, high blood pressure makes the heart work harder to pump blood, which can lead to poor heart function. High blood pressure also contributes to atherosclerosis, or narrowing of the arteries, which can lead to heart attacks and strokes. A study of 996 volunteers found that when they meditated by concentrating on a silent mantra, a repeated non-vocalized word, reduced blood pressure by about 5 points on average. This was more effective among older volunteers and those who had higher blood pressure prior to the study. A review concluded that several types of meditation produce similar improvements in blood pressure. In part, meditation appears to control blood pressure by relaxing the nerve signals that coordinate heart function, tension in blood vessels, and the fight-or-flight response that increases alertness in stressful situations. And number 12 is that you can meditate anywhere. People practice many different forms of meditation, most of which don't require specialized equipment or space. You can practice with just a few minutes daily. If you want to start meditating by choosing a form of meditation based on what you want to get out of it, there are two major styles of meditation. Focused attention meditation concentrates attention on a single object, thought, sound, or visualization. It emphasizes ridding your mind of attention and distraction. Meditation may focus on breathing, a mantra, or a calming sound. Open monitoring meditation encourages broadened awareness of all aspects of your environment, train of thought, and sense of self. It may include becoming aware of thoughts, feelings, or impulses that you might normally try to suppress. So this is a very, very compelling and interesting article. And it says, as its bottom line, meditation is something everyone can do to improve their mental and emotional health. You can do it anywhere without special equipment or memberships. Alternatively, meditation courses and support groups are widely available. There's a great variety of styles, too, each with different strengths and benefits. Trying out a style of meditation suited to your goals is a great way to improve your quality of life, even if you only have a few minutes to do it each day. So that is how this article wraps up. And I think that both of these articles are very related. Some of them overlap specifically. But the first one, 10 health problems related to stress that you can fix, you'll find on webmd.com/balance/stress-management/features. Or you can just go to WebMD and type in the name of the article, 10 health problems related to stress that you can fix. And the other article is on Healthline, and healthline.com is where you would go to find this article. And again, you can search on the page, or you can go to healthline.com/nutrition/12 benefits of meditation. And the article itself is called 12 Science-Based Benefits of Meditation. So this is an important aspect of the work of healing and of really getting life under our control. In many ways, as we are living in this world, there is so much going on in politics, within the media, within the entertainment, the various forms of entertainment. We encounter stressful situations at work. We have stressful situations, younger people in school, from early grades on through college and graduate school. It's a stressful experience. We have stress-related issues within our families, friendships. Life is in part the negotiation and the bearing of stress issues. Now, under normal circumstances, most healthy people can handle that stress. They move through it, they relate to it, they negotiate it, they come to a conclusion, they can move on. But what happens most often is that these stresses build and build and build. And once they become so problematic that it has an impact on our body's functioning, I mean, that might start with problems with sleep. It might start with problems with stress-related eating, which leads to more significant health problems. And then once we start dealing with these health problems, that adds that extra layer of stress. So we are really needing to find a way to pull our energetic system, our nervous system, our thoughts and our mental system, our physical body. We need to be able to reclaim ourselves. And in many ways, I look at this as really reclaiming our sovereignty as beings. Because as we are relating to stress in our lives, in our workplaces, and overall with the chaos happening in the world, we become more and more subjected to outside forces and outside controls. And we either begin to make decisions based on those outside forces, or we begin to shut down and make a decision or make choices by not choosing, in the end leading to more buildup of that stress. And the stress builds up in our physical body. It builds up in the musculature, where we'll have tight neck, tight shoulders. It can build up in the abdomen, where we might just have a lot of stress-related illness in the digestive tract, or we just might feel that tension in our stomach. We might feel it in our back, the lower back. But as the tension builds, it seeps deeper into your body, and it begins to impact your organs. And yes, it's true, the organ most vulnerable might be the heart, but it also could impact whatever part of your body is the weakest. So if genetically, perhaps you have weakness in your kidneys or in the liver or in the spleen or in the intestines, whatever it might be, then it's going to be more dramatically impacted by the level of stress that you are living with and maintaining inside of your body. And because we live in such a stressful world, that this is something that we really have to put front and center, how to manage our stress levels and how to maintain a level of health that will allow us to live our lives in the most highest manner, to the most advantageous, to be able to really live in the world in a way that is with ease and comfort, that will allow us to enjoy our experiences, to have joy in our relationships. So from my perspective, this is one of the things that compounds the issue, is that we are, after a while, emotionally and psychologically strangled and are not able to feel fulfillment in our work or in our endeavors, and are not able to truly just enjoy our relationships and whatever those relationships might be, friendships, marriages, even work and school relationships, because everything comes down to the stress of success and competition and measuring up and being able to be a successful cog in the wheel. So from my perspective, as we begin to regard our life and want to claim our life as our own, meditation becomes an invaluable tool to be able to release the accumulated stress, the accumulated emotional distress. And even though people don't think much about the need for meditation, I would ask, what would become of your health if you decided, oh, well, I don't ever have to brush my teeth. I don't ever have to wash my hair. I don't ever have to change my socks or whatever it might be. We recognize that after a time, we would be in some serious trouble, first of all, with regard to our social discourse, because we would have all of these bad smells and problems like that, but also it would ultimately lead to health problems. So if you don't ever brush your teeth, you're going to end up with decaying teeth, which causes us to lose our teeth, but also that decay and that infection leads to inflammation, which will begin to impact the other systems of the body. Same is true of hair. If we don't clean our hair, sometimes it will become toxic and it will grow bacteria and all kinds of things will be growing in the hair, and that's going to impact the health ultimately. So I think it's important as we go forward in our lives is to begin to realize that, you know, I really do have to pay attention to this factor of the accumulation of stress, even though it isn't something that I can see and smell necessarily. It's something that is having a tremendous impact on my life, and it is to my advantage to do something about it. And for this reason, I want to encourage all of you who are tuned in to really begin to weave into your lifestyle some form of stress management, some form of meditation, some way of releasing, getting rid of, moving through stressful situations so that you can, in the first place, remain healthy, and in the second place, maintain your sovereignty, maintain your integrity as a being. And third, it allows you to broach that gateway, that portal into the more spiritual facets of being. It allows you to find a sense of calmness to be able to reach deeper within yourself and to gain access to those deeper insights that can allow you to spring creative forces and to bring creative energy into your life so that you can have that dynamic of change so that you can make choices that will be beneficial as opposed to making choices that are steeped in more fear-based situations. So it's really important. And so I wanted to go over some of these ideas that were brought forth in these two articles. For those of you who will do the research, you can check that out. For those of you who want to engage with a group of people, you'll find a lot of that as well. If you want more information about the kind of work that I personally provide, you can find out more about that as well. Drop an email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com, and I can give you more specific recommendations. But I think we have two opportune times in our experience of the 24 hours where we can really take a shift and begin to change the dynamic of our life. One is upon waking, and the other is before going to sleep. And if we were to give ourselves at least those two times and put an extra 5 minutes, 10 minutes into your routine upon waking and upon going to sleep, then you'll be able to begin the process and see some of the shifts that will take place. So one of the things that is really helpful for me is that in the morning, when I first am aware of being awake, so generally speaking, when I first come into the awareness of being awake, my brain shifts into gear in terms of, okay, what am I doing today? Do I have to jump out and get ready? Can I linger and rest for a little bit longer? You know, and my brain has a tendency to go immediately to what my tasks of the day are. And I discovered that before we get to that point of getting to the tasks of the day, there's an opportunity for us to just take a breath and not move immediately into the task of the day. And so if upon awaking, we just immediately get into the habit of taking a mindful breath. So your eyes may or may not be open, but you're aware that you're in your body, that you're in a room, that you have stuff to do. And just take a deep breath, allowing the breath to flow into your body as deeply as you can make that inhaled breath. And then exhale a long, slow breath before moving into the necessary consciousness of the day. And that in itself is the most basic meditation that you can do, is to just pause for a moment and take a deep breath, allowing yourself to move into a state of self-awareness. Because very often what that breath will do, it will start to, first of all, release the tension that you're waking into. And it also brings you into a state of awareness of whether or not you are relaxed or whether or not you are feeling a little bit uptight or stressed out about your day. And if you do find that after that first breath that you experience a little bit of relief or you become a little bit more aware of the tension in your system, then you can take a few more breaths. And even if you are in a place where you need to get up and move about the room, you can still do this. You can take a deep breath as you're sitting up. You can take another deep breath as you're putting your feet on the floor. Take another deep breath as you're standing up. And this is 3, 4, 5 deep breaths that you're starting your morning with. And it's allowing you to bring yourself back into alignment with your center. And when we are more aligned with our center, it allows us to approach whatever these issues might be with a sense of balance. So that means that we're allowing ourselves to move into whatever the stressful day might be, but from the vantage point of saying, okay, I can approach this calmly. I can look at this rationally. I can deal with this emotionally, rather than jumping up and moving into your day from a scattered point of view. And this is true no matter where you are in terms of the perceived time. So let's say you woke up late and you know you're going to be late and you know it's going to be a problem. All the more reason to do this, to pull that energy back into your center with your breath. Allow your systems to be stabilized before engaging with the day. Occasionally, we do wake up prior to waking up. I would say that this is always true, but we don't always recognize it. So there is a point when you wake up, which is before you begin to address the stressful issues, where you're just kind of half awake. And one of the things we can do in terms of our mindfulness is that when we come into that wake state, that half wake state, generally speaking, our eyes are still closed. We're not at the point of opening the eyes and getting up out of bed. But you'll wake into a feeling. And what I discovered is that very often, because of whatever else might be going on in my life and whatever stress impulses might be stored in my body, when I wake up, I'll wake up into that sort of stressful stew, and my body will be tense, and there may be even thoughts already running through my mind that are the thoughts that I went to sleep with that are still there as I wake. And we have set ourselves up for this bit of anxiety based on pre-existing stress and tension within the mind and within the body. And so this is where we begin to recognize the need to address our end of day when we're going to sleep. Because when you're going to sleep is where we are setting up the morning, setting up the night. And so if we're laying down to sleep with a lot of thoughts and worries about this and that, then those thoughts and worries will be carried into the dream space, and that will cause most likely a series of dreams in which you're trying to work out this situation. So you're going to have a stressful dream state in which you're going to be encountering all kinds of issues for you to work out, but are not necessarily in the context of you actually working it out. It's just that you are continuing to work through the dream state based on what your worries and concerns are. So as that's happening, our body is not really being allowed to rest. So, for instance, have you ever noticed that if you're dreaming something, your body will act it out even though you're sleeping? So if you're dreaming you're running a race, your body will sort of move as if it's running a race. If you're in your dream and you dream that you're falling, for instance, your body will respond as if it's falling, and very often that will wake you up because you'll clench and you're like, your body jumps when in the dream state you're falling. So this is a way of understanding that whatever stress we're taking into our dream state is impacting the health as well. So during the night, when our body is really designed to repair, it is still working. And it's not able to really ease itself through that state of repairing the cells and working on the digestion and doing all the things it needs to do at night. It won't be doing. And then when your body wakes up, when your consciousness wakes up, you wake up with all of this energy and physiology of stress in your body, in your mind. And so that is how you end up jump-starting each day with more and more and more accumulated stress. So it's really important to do the same thing I recommended in the morning, in the evening. So we will, before going to bed, it's advisable from my perspective to turn off whatever electronics are there. If you have a phone that you use as your alarm clock, put it on the other side of the room. Don't have it near you. And turn off the television, turn off the phones, turn off the communication mechanisms, turn off whatever is around you that is electronic, or move it away from your sleeping field if you can. And then just take the time to do your breathing. So take a nice deep breath. You know, exhale, blow it out, and then do one of the exercises recommended in that reading where you can breathe into areas of your body. So breathe into the neck and shoulders with your attention as if the breath is expanding that area. And as you exhale, allowing the breath to sort of seep through the musculature, relax the muscles as you give it your command, relax. And you can go through your back, you can go through the abdomen, any areas of your body. It's really advantageous to do it from the top of the head to the tip of your toes. And just do that deep relaxation and that will be fine. And then the thing to do is to also consider the internal organs. Breathe into the heart, exhale, sending your breath, an exhaled breath through the muscles of your heart, do with the abdomen, do with the liver, and just spend 5 or 10 minutes doing a deep breathing and a releasing from the musculature, from the organs. And we can do the same thing in terms of our mind. As we have these thoughts and these worries, take a deep breath as if to inflate a balloon. And as you exhale, just visualize those thoughts escaping with the breath, flowing into the ether. And if you have these emotions that are troubling, don't try to resolve them initially. Just breathe into it, exhale. And we can do this exercise in a way that will bring down the temperature of activity inside of our mind, inside of our emotions, inside of our body, so that we have a chance to allow ourselves to rest. And at that point, you can do it while laying down or then lay down and give your body a chance to rest. Even if you might have things you want to jump up and do, email, internet, whatever it is, videos, TV, whatever you have on your late night agenda, give yourself 5 or 10 minutes to just rest the body, to rest through the breathing, and allow your body to take you into sleepy time because it feels less stressed, because it's moving into that opportunity to rest and regenerate. And if you can follow that path, great, follow that path into rest. If whatever reason you feel a need to still get up and do things, then do that. But at least give yourself that little chunk of time where you can focus in on what it means to be at peace within yourself. It's really important to be able to do that. And in that way, you can begin to temper the buildup of that stress. There are many, many more things that we can talk about, and we will cover some of those things as in the next couple of weeks. But this is what I'd like for you to start for this coming week. That 5 minutes in the morning, 5-10 minutes, 5-10 minutes at night before going to sleep, where you're breathing, taking your breath and using it as a tool to release the accumulated stress. So at the very least, you can go into bed from a state of regeneration and you can wake up in the morning with that energy and centeredness. And if you can add a few of these breaths in throughout the day, you'll be well on your way to recovering your sovereignty of being. So I want to thank you for joining me today. You've been listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. Tune in again next week and stay tuned for more great programming. Bye for now.